Welcome to Do You Know You?
The Enneagram podcast, where we know you better than you know yourself.
Hey.
Hi.
So here we are again. Back at it. Is this episode 6?
Yeah.
Episode 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Episode 6, 6 part 2.
Oh, look at that. Symmetry. Yeah. Episode 6, 6 part 2. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
So I wanted to start by clarifying something that was a little bit shaky last time. We totally ended with Audi 5000.
We did, yes.
And you were saying something about a car, and I was like, it has nothing to do with that. So I did some research,
and
I did find that the phrase "I'm Audi" predated the term Audi 5000.
Okay.
So originally, it was slang.
Yes,
it was street slang, meaning I'm out,
right,
out of here, goodbye. Yeah. And it did, though, get tied, however, to the car. It was a very popular car in the 90s. And
the Audi 5000?
Yes. Yes. Okay. And the kids added the 5000 onto it.
Sure.
So my guess is that that was the white version. So once white people got a hold of it, they were like, let's have 5000 on the
Yes. Yeah. I figured it probably had to do with the car. You know, I wasn't sure. I mean, my introduction to it was from Clueless. So.
Right. Well, yes.
Right. D, I'm Audi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just wanted to validate that for you.
Yeah, I love, can I share a fun fact that I learned yesterday?
Yeah, let's go.
It's about anatomy. Is it inappropriate?
Oh yeah. No, go ahead and share it. I knew you were excited about this.
I was excited about this, and take this for what it's worth, people. But, I was unsure of the plural form of testes, and actually the singular testicle is also a testes.
Yeah, I was under the impression that testes was describing
both
the group.
Right.
Yes.
the grouping.
The grouping, exactly.
Of the part itself.
Right.
No, the testes could just be one. But
so
now
you're
going to
tell us.
Remember what the plural is. Do you remember the plural?
Oh my God.
We were both really surprised by it.
I can't believe that you brought this up and you didn't even remember.
Yeah. Wait,
you're fired.
I'm Googling it now. Testis.
Oh my God.
Is testis.
I hate that.
Okay. So just so everyone knows, the plural of testes is testis. And now we can begin.
Oh my God. That should be our new company.
Testis.
we can rival Tesla with testis.
Oh, I think actually it might work. You have the
no
right
one would
logo
know.
And you have the right marketing and call stuff. Anything.
Yeah. We'll just slap a car logo on it. No one will know.
Test it. Can it be like two like circles? Like artisanally drawn circles that are like vaguely.
Artisanal circles do have a special quality about them.
They do. There's like a swoop.
That your old timey ragged circles don't have.
No, this is your analog circles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
DOS circles.
No. Analog circles. Okay. So we should probably talk about the things. We were talking about six. This is six part two. Now that we've moved through the testis discussion and the Audi discussion.
Yeah.
So we talked a lot last time about what the fear of being afraid is with six, which is the core fear of six. It is the fear of being afraid.
Yes.
We talked a lot about why six is mistype. We talked about that there were 9 different kinds of sixes, but I think we should talk about how sixes test, how they test people.
Yeah.
I think it's an important point to focus on, and I want to put a finer point on it, if you will, because some people don't understand why sixes test people. And actually, we just were kind of coming off of teaching our certification training class, and we spent a good hour actually talking about six and moving an hour.
Yeah.
And I just feel like there's always more to say.
Yeah.
But we have talked a lot about
sex. We covered all the mental types yesterday.
Yes. But testing, so if you think about the mental triad, which is really, Chazo actually referred to it as the doing triad. So he has said that all three types, 5, 6, and 7, are trying to find the knowledge, the know-how, the expertise, the mastery of what they need to do in the world at large in order to be safe, secure, and, you know, happy, healthy, all that stuff, right? So, but I don't know if we talked about this last time, side note, but do we talk about what safety actually means in reference to six?
I don't think we did.
Even if we did, I think it's worth reiterating.
Yeah.
Well, so what we always, people always talk about safety and security with sixes. Right. And sixes would be like, I'm not always checking the door. Like, no, you're not always checking your front door to make sure it's locked or the stove is off. Like, that might be OCD if you are doing that.
Right. If you're sleeping by the door, that's a different issue.
If you've checked the door 12 times, that's not you being a six. That's right. Potentially having OCD. It's a whole different thing.
Totally different.
But safety and security varies from six to six. So while one six may not check the door or care about their tires flying off their car, although terrifying, I might add.
Yeah, is this a bad time to insert that we have a friend who, a business partner, who is a six, and she and I were in the car running an errand, and we actually had a very lengthy discussion about how we both fear different parts of our car breaking down while we drive it.
Uh-huh. Like just like falling off, like something. Just,
well, I worry about my wheels like flying off.
Spontaneously flying off. Like yes. They're not bolted to the car.
Well, not like that, but okay. You know,
yeah.
Like a tire blowing out and you're like, you know, 100 miles from home.
And, right. Right. Got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tires flying off. And then she has like a weird engine noise. Mm-hmm. And whenever that happens, she like feels like she needs to pull over. Right. And she told me that, you know, even if she's on the phone with someone, she's like, hold on, I need to listen to my engine to make sure it's not making the wrong noise.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's that expecting the worst, preparing for the worst.
Yeah.
So if you're driving and there's a slight rattle, sometimes, yes, the sixth brain will go to, well, my tires are about to fly off my car and I'm going to die.
Yeah.
So yes, there is that part of six. And most sixes will have something like that somewhere. If yes. It's not their car.
It doesn't have to be about your car.
I make sure I close my blinds because stalkers will look inside.
Right.
I close the drain in the bathtub because there could be a recording device in it. I don't know. I'm getting a little like,
wow,
paranoid, but you know what I mean. Like there's almost sixes. Almost all sixes have something.
Yeah, let's not create a new category of almost six. Because then we have a new problem.
Yeah, no. So yeah, okay. So yes, there is that. You know, I remember our teacher Catherine Favre saying, you know, if there's phobias, it's six. And I would say that anybody could have a phobia. And you know, I think I did talk about this last time. Like I don't love spiders. If I see a spider in my house, I assume that there is a nest somewhere and they're going to overrun my house. And so there's a little bit of a phobia there because it's not really rational. But if you start getting multiple phobias, yeah, you probably could be looking at somebody with that is a six, or at least has a strong six component. But safety and security can be emotional. So I wish I could remember what we talked about last time, but I've slept a few times since then.
Too many times.
But emotional safety is still safety, right? Wanting to have support and security, emotional security from those around you, your friends and family, partner, co-workers, it's still safety and security, and how each six interprets support may differ. So I think we talked yesterday about sixes cutting people out.
Right.
And that usually if we hear stories of that,
yeah,
we usually, it's a good indication of six.
It's
sort of like, oh, they, I was telling them about this really embarrassing thing that happened to me in seventh grade. And they laughed about it in a weird way and it made me uncomfortable. So I don't talk to them anymore.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Is usually six.
Yeah. It's more a pattern of that Because anybody, you know, could have something like that. And, you know, being a teenager not talking to someone anymore is just part of being a teenager. But a pattern, of people in your past that have been discarded, cut off, punished, whatever. That is something sixes that are typically don't know they're sixes or are unaware will do. Right. I don't hear that really happening as much once people know.
Once they know, it does seem to kind of die down a little bit. And then the other piece is like, you know, sometimes people think, oh, well, particularly sixes with four in the tri-type will, you know, think, oh, I'm a four because I will cut someone out because they weren't emotionally whatever, or maybe I was jealous of them or whatever it is. And that's more of a six defense because the four will want to teach the other person. We talked about this yesterday as well in our training, will want to teach people what it feels like to have experienced that. It's the way the four can be kind of haughty and moralistic. And that line to one comes out where it's like, I'm going to stay in relationship with you, but maybe punish you a little bit while I'm in relationship with you so that you'll learn what it feels like to feel what I felt, whatever the four thinks they've been at the mercy of by the other person. They will want to do it back. So there is a sort of, I guess it is a kind of revenge, but it's with the effort of hopefully helping the person see the error of their ways and change their behavior and being a catalyst for change. The six can have difficulty in doing that because of the catastrophizing. I think, you know, how would you say it? It's like it spins out into like, this is going to go on forever, or it's going to get worse, or what is it? Does the catastrophizing contribute to the need to cut off people that aren't safe or secure or what have you?
Yeah. I mean, this is definitely something that I used to do that I don't really do anymore.
Yeah.
Luckily I've broken that habit. Mm-hmm. It's the tendency to want to do that is still there.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's strong.
Yeah. As all of our Enneagram types.
Right.
They're still there.
But I just override it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as a six, there is that sort of place in the middle, but it's uncomfortable because it requires you to recognize both where the other person may have been coming from and giving them the benefit of the doubt,
right,
which is difficult. And then trusting that if it does happen again, that you can handle it.
Yes.
And so I think there is that part of six, and I've talked about this a little bit with some of my clients. There's that part of six where it's like, it's easier to just cut and run. To just cut it off and be done with it than it is to have to address the messiness and to have to go to the other person and say, you know, hey, you made me uncomfortable and I feel weird and like, let's figure it out. And I think we just project so much onto what they could say, what they could do, the conflict that could arise. And it's just like, why go through all of that?
Right.
And so it's easier to justify cutting it off than trying to, you know, give the person a chance.
Yeah, it's interesting though, because as we're talking about it, I'm also thinking about, you know, the contradictions that are inherent with six. And I know some sixes will, and I think it probably exists in both exists together, because it is, sixes are paradoxical in that way, but where sometimes there's a tendency to stay, to give people the benefit of the doubt. Benefit of the doubt for too long.
Yes.
So it's either or of those poles.
Well, and that's where it's scary in the middle.
Right.
Because it's like, okay, am I going to turn into a doormat, like a human doormat, or should I just go the other way and just be done with everybody?
Yeah. There's a lot of, I've noticed this, you know, it's becoming more popular and it's necessary information that people need to have. About, you know, boundaries and appropriate boundaries and healthy boundaries. And sixes in particular seem to need to do boundary work.
Absolutely.
And are often attracted to discussion around boundaries and how to set them and how to keep them and how to hold them and all of that. And I think it is because of that sort of, they know their tendency to maybe let people cross boundaries or give people the benefit of the doubt too much. Mm-hmm. And the six also has that fear, not unlike eight and four, actually, of being duped or having the wool pulled over their eyes. So then it's, they will overcorrect and then may see danger, whether emotional or physical danger or psychological or whatever, in a relationship or a person, and it may be amplified beyond what may actually be there, because it's like, well, I don't want it to get, it's like zooming ahead to the point where it is really terrible and it's gone too far.
Right. And so, then you're like wishing you had taken care of it
right
before it became a problem.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I do think there is that sort of, but I do think sixes struggle the most with boundaries, nines as well. But nines don't even know they need boundaries in a way that, you know, they're sort of like boundaryless until somebody bumps against one, and then you get the,
it usually takes nines a little bit longer to implement those.
Right. But I have known a lot of sixes that really get and benefit from, you know, doing boundary work because of the tendency to be too accommodating or permissive on the one hand, but then, you know, like everything else with the six, they will flip, and then there's the too strong a boundary, and, you know, and they're overstating. So it's the tendency sometimes to over assert, sometimes with sixes, where when they do find their voice, then it's like everything is potentially dangerous or damaging or upsetting, and you have to kind of keep everything out. I kind of see it a lot with the self-pres, but I'm sure.
Yeah, it's also a slightly, I don't want to use the word unhealthy, because, you know, people throw that around, healthy, unhealthy all the time. And it's like, you know, it's
honest. What are we really talking about?
Yeah. But it's a slightly less aware mechanism.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think once you know you're a six and you know this is part of it, it makes it a little bit easier to, like, you know, try to deal with it in a healthier way.
Yeah. I mean, an example of this, and I'm sure you'll remember, is we had a friend when we were in grad school.
Okay. Going back to grad school.
We were having a discussion about Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Goodness. It was prior to all of the, you know, really obvious testimony about sexual abuse and all that came out. So this was like, I don't know, 2011 or something.
Oh, maybe even before that.
Like, maybe 2008. Anyway, so there was still a lot of sort of vagueness around that. And anyway, he died. It was the year he died, whenever that was.
Yeah.
And we got into a discussion about him being a pedophile or, you know, abuser or whatever. And, you know, there was still a lot of open questions. For me, it was sort of like, I don't know. You know, he seems infantilized in some. So 2009, we looked it up. So 2009 is when this happened. You know, it was obvious that he was somewhat infantilized and age regressed. And so I was just sort of saying, well, you know, there could be that just affinity for being around children, which can be, very common for people that have developmental, sort of stunted developmentally.
Right.
And he was, because of his childhood and all of that. A lot of trauma there. But this particular person, who was a six, a self-pressed six, interpreted my comments that were meant to just be sort of, I guess, just kind of compassionate in a way.
Right. That's what I was going to say.
Experience, without getting into the crimes or any of that.
Right. You were just coming from a place of empathy, you know, in terms of, we don't really know where he's coming from or what he's been through. And all of that plays into, you know, the situation.
Yeah. So I wasn't saying, oh, he could never have done those things, because I didn't know. And, you know, I wouldn't, I think I remember even saying, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't know. But anyway, so we had this conversation, which at the time wasn't terribly adversarial or anything.
Right.
And then we went on a trip, a conference, an Enneagram conference.
Yep.
And I got a long email. Surprise email after about a week. Maybe 2 weeks after that even happened. It was not immediate. where what had happened in the interim between when we didn't talk to this person and we did talk to this person, they had built a case against me, mm-hmm. and perhaps that I was, you know, maybe somehow that I sympathized with pedophiles and that I could potentially be dangerous. This person also had a new child, you know, they were a new parent. And, but it was very clear that a lot had happened in this person's imagination,
mm-hmm.
That was not part of the conversation we had, but in the course of building the case, I became dangerous and right. they did not want to talk to us anymore, see us, and they right. didn't feel comfortable and maybe, and then they pulled in other things, other discussions we had had, things that I had shared, you know, personally were sort of folded into their paranoia around why I might be compassionate at all to someone like Michael Jackson, because they saw him as a monster. And so it was just a really good example of how the sixth imagination can spin out mm-hmm. and people, without even interacting with the people, people can become almost like caricatures of, you know, their flaws become amplified and they be, you know, things that maybe weren't malicious can become malicious. And it, so that's sort of what we're talking about when we're talking about the way the sixth can sort of polarize people. This person has since apologized and sort of, you know, owned their part of it. And I, you know, even though it was kind of upsetting at the time for someone to be like, I think you also could be a child molester. I was like,
well,
oh,
and
they were
just, it wasn't just an email of like, let's have a discussion about this. It was, they were ending
right.
the relationship.
They were cutting off
because yeah. of their fear of you
right.
being the same kind of person
right.
as him, right. just because you were, you know, trying yeah. to look at the other side.
Right. And to be fair, this person had experienced some trauma in their past. And yeah. so that was a very real issue for them. But they were no longer able to parse. I became an idea, mm-hmm. a concept of
right.
something dangerous.
And they were finding evidence to support that wasn't in any way related.
Right. Yes. Yes. And that is how the sixth
so that,
defense
yes.
strategy works.
Yes. It's some, like deciding the conclusion. And then sometimes when you're really in six and you're stressed out, you've decided the conclusion and then you can fill in all the details between A and C
right.
and make it fit.
Right. Yes. My mom is a six, and I actually just thought about this quote recently, 'cause she used to say it a lot. Because I, you know, I was afraid of spiders, and my mom also doesn't like spiders, but she didn't go around like looking for them in the house. And I remember, so when I would see one spider in the house, then I would get sort of obsessive because I'd be, mm-hmm. I'd assume others
right.
were in secret places. And so I would get vigilant in a way that I normally am not about stuff like that. And my mom would always say, well, if you look for something, you'll find it. And she used to say that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
it's true.
Okay. But it's a very six-ish
yeah.
Way of viewing the world. And so without even realizing it, she was kind of articulating a process that she must do a lot, right? It's like, if you want to find a problem, you'll find one somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to find evidence for something, particularly something dangerous or something off about something or a situation, you can find it and then fill in the blanks and create whatever narrative you want.
Right. But it's also a great, you know, it's kind of like the medicine is also, if you look for something, you'll find it. Meaning that just because you think you found something doesn't mean that you did.
Right.
It yes. means you were looking. So if you're looking to be suspicious of people, if you're looking you'll for people to be yeah. shady, that's what you're going to see.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It's like putting on shady glasses,
mm-hmm.
right? And then all you can see are shady things. And even benign things sound shady. So it's like, you know,
that would be terrifying,
right? Shady glasses. Patent that too.
Yeah.
You can put it under our umbrella company, Testis.
Yeah.
So
a division of Testis
division
Limited.
Of Testis. Shady glasses. Yeah, I mean, but yes, it is the way that the six is. So on the one hand, it makes them good at sort of sussing things out, sort of figuring out what's really happening, because they, much like fours and eights, which they're good at sort of recognizing that everything isn't what it seems to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so the six knows this about themselves. They know that, well, I'm not everything I seem to be. Maybe I seem really sweet and nice and funny, but I'm actually, you know, grumpy and don't want to do anything and don't really like people that much.
Right.
Right. So they're aware that everything isn't what it seems. And so there's a natural sort of cynicism and mistrust of others in the environment, because it's like, yeah, people are going to be fake. And the fake part, people think that's four. People
not wanting to be fake.
Right. And not that fours want to be fake, but
right. As well, an image of course type, they don't.
It's kind of a performance a lot of the time, until they, you know, have done some work. So fours value authenticity. But, you know, and you can listen to our four podcasts when we talk about that, but they value authenticity, but they're really performing authenticity, which isn't the same as being authentic.
Right.
But the six, more than any other type, says they don't like things that are fake. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be fake. They hate fake people. It's the six that does that, because they fakeness, implies concealment of something.
Mm-hmm.
Which is uncomfortable for sixes, even though they are also concealing things.
Well, that's where it comes from.
Right.
And that's kind of where it ties into projection.
Yes.
I conceal, so others must be doing the same.
Right. Yes.
I don't say what I'm thinking, so others must be doing the same.
Right.
I assume the worst in people.
Yes.
Others and on must and on. Be doing
the same. Yes.
Right.
So yeah, it is you're right. It is a form of projection. And it's recognizing, the thing is with all the types, whatever the thing they're focusing on is vital and is true. We're all seeing a different part of the diamond, you know, mm-hmm. different facet of the diamond. But when you only look at that facet, then it becomes distorted.
Yeah. You miss out on the full story.
Right. Yes.
There's an aerial view.
Right. So yes, maybe someone is, slightly lying about what they did that day. You know, maybe your partner didn't go straight to the gym and come home. So yeah, maybe they lied about it, but maybe they were out getting you a gift or, mm-hmm. you know, doing something they didn't want you to know about that was a surprise or something. So it's not always insidious.
Right.
And that's where the sixth brain goes to, is what's the angle here? What are they really after?
Mm-hmm.
And is this going to be a problem for me later? Right.
We're so, like human lie detectors.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's interesting about the mental center, the head types, is that Echazo also said that the center deals with the sort of a problem of deceit. And sometimes that's confusing for people, because we think of deceit as being, you know, three. But threes are deceiving themselves. They are putting a mask on and then mistake the mask for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So the deceit is more
it's a deceit of image.
Yes, it's I am who you think I am,
right? Rather than a specific element, right. Or lie.
Exactly. Yeah, threes are, you know, and Naranjo said this, threes are actually really factual reporters. They mm-hmm. kind of just tell you what happened, what's going on. It's more efficient that way. It's when they feel like people are not looking at them favorably, that they may embellish or sort of inflate themselves in right. one way or another. But the six, or the mental types in general, in terms of deceit, is acting as if you know when you don't know. So another word for it could be sophistry. But the mental types will all sort of, because they want the information to know how to navigate in the world, they don't necessarily always have it. And so what the six does is they give their authority away and place it into an institution, a system, a structure, a person,
a religion,
a philosophy, concept. A political party, science, right. whatever. And then that, because they don't fully trust themselves, they can't fully trust the sources of information. But yeah, it's this tendency to deceive themselves as well as wanting to deceive others, not wanting to, but inadvertently, because they need to know, right? They need certainty. And so then sometimes there can be like the false proclamation of knowing something, but they know that they don't fully know it. So then there's that sort of insecurity around it. But then depending on the six, but typically what you get when the insecurity arises is the argumentativeness.
Right.
Which we talked about last time a little bit, but that they are going to quarrel with you or verbally spar, and it's almost like a debate, because what they're really trying to do is work out, they're holding on to their sense of reality and their truth, but also try to figure out who out of the two of you or however many people are involved can be trusted. So anyway, that it's the way that argumentativeness can work, and how it ties into testing as well, testing authority figures, testing yourself, testing your loved ones, testing knowledge. Everything is constantly tested.
Well, I mean, and it's not only, you know, putting authority into something or someone outside of yourself, but then testing that. So there's probably been some testing before you give over authority.
Right. Yes.
But then, you know, the testing doesn't stop.
No.
It continues.
Yes.
And so that's kind of brings us full circle to, if you're looking for something, you're going to find it.
Yes.
And if you give over your authority and then you test and test and test and test,
yeah,
eventually it's someone's not going to pass your test.
Well,
and then that somehow confirms that you,
right,
you know, you were duped, you were scammed, the other person has done something
is wrong.
Yeah. Right.
Well, it sort of reminds me of clients that we've had, or people that have come to us for typing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we type them as a six. And some people, the vast majority of people that when they come to us for typing sessions, once we kind of give them the argument, show them the pattern, they're like, oh, wow, why didn't I see that, right? But
right,
occasionally, we get the sixes who will come and they seek us out because they like our data or information, the research that we've done and our posts and all of that. And they feel like we're a trustworthy source of guidance. And then from there, we do the typing session and then say, okay, well, it looks like you might be a six. And then all of a sudden things change because we weren't necessarily agreeing with their typing. And sixes, not unlike twos, want some like a form of agreement, but it's coming from a different place. The six wants it because it's like, if you don't agree with me, one of us is wrong. And I don't want it to be me because this is what I've built my reality on top of. Right. So especially with identity, if they're say typing as a four and then we say, well, you're a six, it's ego dystonic. And then it throws everything off center because it's like, well, what else am I missing? And then that feels dangerous.
Right.
So then what we get is the reactivity against either us or the Enneagram as a whole. They want to poke holes in it. They find the problems with it.
But what they're hearing is you don't know yourself.
Right.
And if you hear feedback, either directly or indirectly, that you don't know yourself, I mean, then what do you know?
Right. Right.
I mean, then nothing you've known is necessarily true.
Right. It exacerbates that fear of being crazy.
Right.
Which is sixes don't want. None of the mental types do.
I mean, if you can't know yourself, then you can't know anything.
Right.
So if you've come into this session and you think you're one type and you're another type, well then, I mean,
yeah,
what do I know? And nothing.
And it's another way that the six utilizes projection, because it's too alarming to allow one that you may not have known.
Right.
Because if you can't know yourself, what can you know? And sixes do want to know. And depending on the tri-type, will go on deep searches to know themselves, like the 649 or 648 or 641. Not that the other tri-types can't, but those in particular. And so then it can't be that I was wrong. It's that, A, you don't know me.
Right.
So you can't tell me about me.
Yes.
Maybe you don't know what you're talking about. And then often then they will spin out and then try to
with someone else.
Yes. Just go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And they'll try to get the validation so that their reality can be recentered.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that's, a lot of that's happening very unconsciously, because what they say to us that they're doing is, oh, well, I just wanted to get another opinion, or, well, I know myself, and, well, if you know yourself, you don't need to go to multiple people for confirmation.
Right.
And that is something that you don't see with fours. If someone mistypes a four in a session, and you, if it were me and I know I'm a four, I would be like, okay, well, that's your opinion. And I mean, it may irritate me, because
you just wouldn't go back.
I might bother me a little bit, because I'd be like, why aren't they seeing me?
Right.
The way that, but I'm not going to either go back to them, and which we have had, people will come back to us again, thinking they will then convince us of something else.
Mm-hmm.
Sixes and nines are the worst with this. They're like, oh, maybe I didn't say it right.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if I take the test again differently, or I write different words. So sometimes they'll go and learn, you know, what the type is that they want to be, or that they most identify with, I guess would be the better way to say it. And then they'll start using that language. And it's really only the six that does that.
Yeah.
It's, I heard fours use these words. And so then all of a sudden, and we can see how many times someone's taken a test, right? So we'll see that they've done it four or five times. And then the words get increasingly more crafted towards whatever it is that they want to see. And on the one hand, they know they've done that. So then if you do confirm what it is they want you to see them as, then it undermines us as an authority, because they're like, well, what idiots? Because I just use the words that trigger this. But anyway, it's usually only the six that does that. So, but it's, sometimes people will think it's four, because it's like they're searching for who they are, but.
Well, I mean, even just like the complication of everything you just said.
Yes.
Like I can imagine people that are listening that are not sixes and really don't know much about the type are like, what? What?
Why would you go through all of that?
But it's like that. That's you taking on the mentality of six. It's so convoluted and so complicated that like other people are like, okay, what is happening right now?
Yeah. And it's all in service of it affirming whatever your reality is that you have built.
I will say, you know, we sixes can give us a hard time sometimes. And, you know, we kind of tease them for like taking the test so many times, or, you know, trying to craft their words, not trusting that they're a six, which is part of it. But I also have found, you know, they can go the other way. So usually when we have a six, if they seem unhappy with being typed as a six, I'm always like, okay, this is going to go one of two ways. One, we're never going to see them again,
because
they think we're full of it and they're not ready to go there. They don't want to see it yet. Or two, in 24 hours, we're going to get another email where they're like, okay, I want to have another session. I don't believe you, but if this is true, I need to know it. And that's the six that that really wants to know. And I know eventually that they'll come around to it, because they're searching for the truth.
And they may bounce back and forth between a couple types during that time. And it's just, it's a patience thing.
They need time,
and they have to be patient with themselves, because they want to know immediately, because it's the uncertainty. It's the question mark that is so uncomfortable that you could potentially have missed such an integral thing like your own type. It makes sixes feel dumb, which is not, which is one of the things sixes don't want to feel. And so, in order to not be dumb, you either have to attack the information itself, or the person disseminating it, or you have to turn it in on yourself, which is also not comfortable. So it's a no-win on the one hand. So they're really trying to reconcile. So that's why we have a lot of compassion for when that happens, because we know why it's happening. But watching it unfold can be frustrating.
And what I would say to sixes in every type is, there's nothing wrong with you that you don't know your type. It's not a failing on your part. It doesn't mean that you don't know yourself or that you're stupid. That's kind of how egos work. You know, that's why traditionally people have a teacher and they have a school that they commit to, because the teacher can see parts of you that you can't see.
Right.
And that's the mirroring piece that's really important. So in order to see ourselves accurately, we do have to take in feedback from other people. And so it is important, you know, to find a teacher that you trust and that you can take feedback from and look at those parts of yourself that you're not able to see.
Yeah. And on the teacher piece, it's interesting because the six pattern will run a couple of ways. One, they find a source of authority, data, information, say with the Enneagram, right? So maybe they found, Tom Condon's work or something.
Right.
And then they can become kind of devotees of that person's work where they are very loyal. They consume it. That doesn't mean that the testing and mistrust doesn't come up. And so they may cross-check with other things, but they will be more loyal to one school of thought than another, which actually, in a weird way, is more helpful with something like the Enneagram or something because they don't get confused.
Yes.
It's when they start doing the sort of data mining process and going to everyone and everything and reading everyone and everything. And the problem with it, like with the Enneagram, is that the approaches are so different, which is why we prefer to go back to the basic Ichazo Naranjo OG Enneagram. But if you're taking all these different perspectives, then you're going to get contradictory information, and that just makes them more frustrated.
Right.
They're like, well, this person said this about six, but then this person said this, and they're trying to reconcile it and find the exact description of them.
You're going to be perpetually confused
and then frustrated and then irritable and then it's a hamster wheel.
And so that's why we usually tell people it's best to commit to a school at least at first, and you know, if you find yourself unsatisfied or needing more information, then, you know, try something else.
Yeah.
But like, let yourself be immersed in a particular philosophy for a while and see how it feels to you. See if it resonates as true. And if there are just things where you're like, well, this feels incomplete, or this seems like it's really just skimming the surface and it's platitudes.
Right.
Like, find something else.
Yeah. Yeah. Investment in a path is really what all of us need with something like the Enneagram. Yeah. But sixes need in particular, but it's really hard for them because it requires surrender, right? To at least temporarily to whatever that teacher or information is. And even that word kind of makes some people like shudder because it's like, and it's like culty. It's like, surrender to me. But it is like surrendering to, okay, this is the path, the philosophy or the perspective that I'm going to learn to get a foundation of whatever it is, and then you can go out and cross-check. But if you don't have that foundational knowledge, which really is actually secondarily important to like the intuitive, instinctive knowing that all sixes have. I think I said this before many times in different contexts, but sixes have really good intuition. And they know what sounds true and what doesn't, but sometimes what they know to be true doesn't necessarily align with what makes them comfortable.
Right.
Especially around their own type.
Yes.
So I very often, when we go back and circle back with sixes, they're like, no, I knew, and I just didn't like it, and it pissed me off. So I fought against it. I rebelled, right, against being, you know, it's, you don't know me, you know, and then it becomes sort of a,
well, even having to rebel against a type, it's
right,
like,
right,
why,
right,
you know, I mean, it's at any point, you know, we tell people to try it on, try on six, try on two, try on seven, like whatever type you think it might be, try it on,
right,
and you know, live like a six for a month.
Mm-hmm.
Think of yourself as a six, deal with yourself like you're a six. If it doesn't work, if it's not fitting, that's not right.
Yeah.
It's not the type. But you can, at any point, you can pivot.
Right.
And I think sometimes sixes forget that there's no harm in trying something and getting it wrong and trying something else. That's how we all learn.
And not trying something to negate that it's the thing.
Exactly.
Because sometimes sixes will be like, okay, fine, I'm a six. But instead of like looking at the ways in which they are a six, it goes to, these are all the ways that I am not like a six.
Well, and then they're trying to teach us how we've mistyped them.
Right, right.
And, you know, it's like, well, then if you don't think you're a six, whatever type you think you are, just be that type.
Exactly. But they don't, they can't do that either because they know intuitively that that's not right.
I think, you know, if there were a little gem, one little gem I could leave for sixes, it would be that it isn't anyone else's job to convince you of anything. You know, the whole orientation of like, prove it to me.
Yes.
I'm not going to.
Right.
It's not my job to prove something to you.
Yeah, it's nobody's job to prove anything to anybody, really.
Like, we just teach people what we know, what we've learned, what we've experienced over, you know, 21 years of working with this material. You can take it, you can leave it. I'm not offended.
Right.
You're going to have to do what's best for you. And we understand that. But it is never anyone else's job to prove anything to you. You need to prove it to yourself.
And I will add this about sixes. I see this more in the online communities where there will be this a six, usually that's mistyped as a five or something else.
Right.
An eight, maybe, or four. And they'll be applying all of this, a lot of language around logical arguments and this doesn't make sense and straw man and, you know,
Logical fallacies.
All these logical fallacies about the Enneagram and all that often signals to me is A, they want more dogma around the system so that it's easier to, it's more predictable, it's more replicable in terms of like, they want a map that is reliable that they can rely on, and that is there, but it often gets lost in the way in which the six approaches the system, and it things become kind of convoluted and complex, and then there's all these sort of logical if then this type and that type, and there what I see when that happens is I see that the six has sort of abdicated the intuitive part of knowing themselves or other people.
Yeah.
And they're looking at this, they want this roadmap that is clearly defined and
They want it to be like math.
Yes. And maybe sometimes even based on bad descriptions or information. Yeah. But they will build it's like a sandcastle on top of this sort of weak foundation. And then when the six realizes if someone engages them or challenges what the six believes they know, that's when you get the reactivity part. Because you're upending their sense of reality, which is uncomfortable.
Right.
For any of us, but particularly for...
Well, I mean, and at the end of the day, you know, this is a system about humans.
Right.
And human psychology, human motivation. And humans are never simple.
Right.
It's never black and white. It's actually mostly gray area.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, this isn't a science.
But sixes should know that better than anybody because they are the most emotionally complex. But then they want a very almost simplified, perfect description of the way they do six. And it just is not going to happen.
No.
It's
just that's not how the type is. So first of all, it would be like a 500-page book trying to write the most in-depth, specific description of six.
Right.
And even then, it's still not going to get all the subtleties.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, of course, there's a phase in anybody finding something like the Enneagram. There's that phase where you find any test you can find and take it and
compare.
But I think that's normal for everyone.
That's like the getting excited phase.
Yeah, that's the excitement part of it. But then, you know, we've known people that have been studying the Enneagram for 3-4 years or more, and they are still taking tests, and they're still... going to different teachers for typing sessions, and they still
are asking their teachers, you know, what types people are all the time.
Right.
And it's like, okay, you've been studying this for years.
Right.
Why are you still asking your teachers?
Yeah.
Like
rest in, and yeah, it can take a long time to master it, but after that long, as much information as they've likely consumed, they should be able to start, but it's the lack of trust in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that's a very common sort of pattern with six, where it's years of study without being no closer to solidifying or feeling settled in their type. And as long as they're not settled, they're going to keep searching. But it's just catching yourself. If you're listening to this and you think you may be a six, if you even think you may be a six, that's a good clue.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're listening to it and you're having a visceral response, maybe an angry response to what we're talking about, that's always a good clue.
That's a good point.
For you to look at, because that means we are probably pointing to something in you that you don't want to acknowledge, or you know is true, that you don't want to be. And then, you know, and we talked about some of this last time, but it's the stigma against the stigma against being a six does not help the cause.
No.
And
I'm over that.
I always tell my six clients, like, stay away from the online groups mm-hmm. where it's six bashing. And if you have any kind of question about anything, you're a six, or, yeah, because that's a real thing. And that can be really toxic, kind of damaging environment. But
yeah,
I totally intended to get to talking about the instincts, but I think we're going to have to do that another time. Different instincts of six.
I think so. Maybe we'll have some instinct focused episodes in the future.
Podcast.
Yeah.
And endorsed by Testis.
Oh my God.
Testis, which will be publicly traded soon enough.
Oh, of course.
Testis.
Get your shares while you can. I also think, you know, what's coming up, just to give you guys a little preview, I think we're going to be talking a little bit more about narcissism.
Yeah.
Sterling's doing some really exciting book writing.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll definitely be doing some posts on our social media about it, kind of gearing up for the book, which should come out sometime this spring.
About details to come.
27 subtypes of narcissism. And 27, for those of you that don't know, you know, three Enneagram types. I'm sorry. No. Wow.
There are only three types, you guys.
It's just the primary triad, 3, 6, and 9, and everything else be damned. 27 types. So it's the three instincts, social, self, present, sexual, and then the 9 types, which makes 27. So, right. So I have identified 27 different subtypes of narcissism based on the intersection of instinct and the type itself. So we're talking more about that.
So what people will be able to know from your book is if they know a narcissist or they've been in a relationship with one, they'll be able to recognize the flavor of narcissism.
Yes.
And then, you know, like you were saying, they'll all be in there. So it's like self-present one, right. Social one, sexual one, and then on.
And really the premise of the book is, you know, we're all a little bit narcissistic, right? So it's like, it exists on a spectrum. So what the subtypes are really kind of highlighting is when we sort of cross the Rubicon from like normal, you know, what I like to call everyday narcissism to the more pathological forms of it. So I try to give a little flavor of the development of into the deeper neurotic sort of places, but you should be able to recognize yourself even in one of the 27 descriptions. Cause we all, if you have an ego, you have a little bit of narcissism in there.
Yeah, you'll be able to see your own flavor of crazy and where you're going.
Yes, exactly. And who does not want to taste their own flavor of crazy?
I've had plenty of my own flavor.
Oh,
I'm tired of this flavor.
It's starting to get gross. So anyway,
How about we end with toodles this time?
Toodles.
Toodles.
But I can. Okay. Sure.
Did you have an alternate option?
No,
or?
I don't. Toodles is very like. There's something about it that's very old.
Yeah.
Okay, like an ancient person.
I mean, I've never heard an old person say toodles.
I haven't either. So where's that? It's kind of British.
I Like, what are
like
we,
Mrs. Doubtfire?
What are we doing here?
I think it's Mrs. Doubtfire.
Where, like, every time we end an episode, we have to, like, go research, like, etymology, and I'm just done. I'm over it.
So, basically, what we're saying is next time, be prepared at the beginning to hear about the etymology of toodles.
Yeah.
And also look out for the new Testis drop.
Okay.
No? All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.